Hey, it's time for another Tacky Talk with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy, because it wouldn't be a Friday Tacky right now without a Tacky Talk. How are you?
Hey, no, it's thank goodness for Friday, and it's Tacky Friday every Friday. So,
well, since last we talked, by the way, there's a new president.
Oh, yeah, just new president, new vice president, new history being made, oldest president ever at the time of swearing in, first female Black Asian vice president, highest elected office a woman at first kill has ever held in history of the United States, and a unexciting speech in the sense of the presentation.
Oh, well, I guess predictable, I think, is probably a good way to describe it. And only the second Catholic president in the country's history, which really wasn't that much of a big deal this time around.
Yeah, shows times have changed, right? That their religious background has not become a forefront issue in politics for the moment. Same thing with Bernie Sanders. I mean, the idea of having a Jewish president, even though Bernie did not get the nomination, didn't come up as a major issue again. So I think this is one of those things that time has moved forward on. Does it mean that we've moved past it? Well, time will tell. But for the moment, clearly that most of the country, I'm not saying the whole country, that's very unfair. But I think many of the country, most of the country has moved on from a religious divide, particularly regarding Catholicism and Protestantism and, leading our nation. So yeah, that's very exciting too. And I think a lot of Biden's upbringing is reflected in his speech and his approach. We all make fun that he's old and he's been in a Washington institution for, 45 plus years. But first and foremost, I mean, he's a working class kid, in a Catholic family. And I think a lot of those moral values that he has a child that he's grown up with his whole life is going to be brought straight into the White House. And I think there'll be a pleasant change for many people who may or may not agree with Joe Biden. But people that I've known that have interacted with him pretty much say what you see on TV is what you get in real life, including his faux pas and his choice of words sometimes, which I expect he'll be much more restrained, hopefully, about some of his slip of tongues. But very clear that opening speech to me spoke to a lot of folks that have been tired over the last 4 years. And I felt it was like a lot of a generational issue because it had a bit of Kennedy in it. It felt a little bit like Ronald Reagan. It felt a little bit like George Bush too. It felt a little bit like Obama. And I had that little bit of feeling from all these different decades. And also laughing at one point because, he mentioned that Jimmy Carter couldn't come. It reminds me how at home when we have too many events, we cover for each other. It's like, Senator Keenan is tied up in another event. I'm sorry you couldn't make it, but he sends his best regards. A former President Carter couldn't make it today, but he sends his best regards.
Well, like, I think he's, 96 years old now? So he's, would have been quite a Herculean effort, I guess, to get him there.
Absolutely. I think we all understand why Jimmy Carter couldn't come. Although it was funny because I was talking to another friend whose daughter's a teacher. And when he got to that part of the speech, people asked, who's Jimmy Carter?
Oh, gee.
Yeah, they haven't got that far in the history book yet to know who Jimmy Carter is.
Okay, so, there you go.
Okay, now we're getting old.
Do you think his message of unity will resonate, throughout the halls of Congress and the country?
I'm a bit of a cynical human being. I think people figured out if you're watching up these podcasts, I'm not exactly a positive person. But I do think the answer is maybe. And that's kind of a coy answer. I think certain folks who never accept the situation, like some folks that never accepted any Republican or Democrats election, is going to not change. I don't see them changing their minds. I do think people that were looking for change is hoping for change. And I think that's really the target audience in the end. If you're locked in this mindset that this is a fraud election and he's not your president, all that stuff, nothing's going to change your mind. And people are like watching this, oh no, that's not true. I'm like, yes, it is, buddy. I mean, I've done this so long dealing with people that once people are locked in, they're locked in. And it didn't matter if you thought, 4 years ago that Trump wasn't a legitimate president because of the popular vote, or you don't believe that Biden's the president because it was a rigged election, nothing he's going to say is going to change your mind on either of those positions. I've dealt with people my whole life, and it's always like, oh yeah, I'm not like that. Well, I'm pretty confident that if you start to say things like that, you probably know better. I see angry phone calls coming now.
I think his hope, at least, is that a majority of people will try.
I agree with that. I mean, even I agree with that because I still believe that in democratic politics in this republic, that elections are a spectator sport, and you know, some in Quincy, a blood sport sometimes. That we come back to fight another day. And that's always been my mentality about democratic politics, unlike authoritarian countries like China or Russia, you know, banana republics, where you don't get to fight another day. So you have to start literally fighting, or the government has to oppress you to keep fighting. Here, we lose an election, you get off the mat, you go back to work, and 2 or 4 years' time, or six if it's a senator, you go back and fight again. And you always know there's another chance to go at somebody because, you know, there's an election cycle. So what's the problem, right? If you live in a totalitarian country, you don't get a chance to fight again. Look at Belarus. The guy keeps changing the rules on you, and the ballot box is completely rigged. So you don't get a chance to fight again. Now you have 250,000 people in the streets and basically the military, you know, gunning people down to try to quell people from saying they want to have a review of the ballots. But here, Georgia counted the ballots 3 times, once voluntarily. You know, you were able to go to the courts in multiple states and have it reviewed by a third-party judge, of which many were Donald Trump's appointed judges. Mm-hmm. But they did their impartial job. So I get this whole thing about politics and judges, but I do believe there's, you know, things that judges just don't do, and one is rigging politics in a democratic election. So, you know, and people have been watching Hong Kong, you know, they people won the district seats, which aren't very powerful, but since symbolism, but the Hong Kong government has suspended the legislative council seats this past year because of COVID. Korea, the America, Europe has been able to figure out how to have elections in the middle of COVID. So you tell me a modern city cannot figure out how to run an election, whereas COVID rates of less than 50 people a day. Come on. I mean, this is common sense, folks. I mean, we can right. figure out something going on over there.
I guess so, more notable really is the fact that Kamala Harris is the vice president.
Yeah, no, this is extremely exciting. You know, although I do find it humorous in my own political work way, when, you know, you work so hard to get out of the U.S. Senate, and because it's a 50-50 Senate, you know, don't empty your office out just yet.
She's the tie-breaking vote, yes. She's the tie-breaking vote.
Yeah. We'll keep your office warm for you. So,
well, now she gets two offices.
Yeah, yeah. I'm being a little bit cute, but yeah. No, it's very exciting because, you know, that could be a drag on the ticket, too.
Mm.
People old enough remember Mondale's vice president. Was it Geraldine Ferraro?
Yep.
So, you know, it's not a gimmick. You know, this is the best choice available in the Democratic primary. And, you know, send a message that times have indeed changed. And I think, you know, people look at that second seat, whether it be running lieutenant governor or president or vice president, you know, does that person bring value to the election? Beyond just getting elected, what does the person bring value, as well as whether that person could be potentially a drag on the ticket that could actually bring you down. And we've seen that happen as well. I mean, John McCain and Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin was a good, very good start in terms of like regenerating that campaign.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately, for a myriad of reasons, and you know, I kind of feel bad for her. I know Democrats hate it when I say things like that, but I did actually feel bad for her at one point. You know, she became a drag in one. And that became a problem. So, I mean, maintaining a positive point of view in the campaign, you're sticking the message and not treating your vice president as a, as like, hey, you know, look, I picked a woman, you know, of color, you should vote for me. Not using a person that way, you know, is very much a good sign. And I'm excited about it. I mean, her mother is Indian. You know, she's a child of immigrants. And a single mom. You know, his mom, her mother was a single mother. I can relate to that. And I think a lot of us can. So, you know, the fact that, you know, you can be successful from an immigrant family is a story of a lot of people in Quincy right now.
Yeah, that's very true. What do you think about Biden's plan to tackle the pandemic right now?
Well, the news yesterday wasn't very positive because I was watching the ABC News last night about how they didn't realize how bad things were when they got there in terms of preparedness. And Dr. Fauci being put back on the front spotlight locally, internationally on addressing the pandemic, I think is very key. I think, you know, many of us agree that he actually knows what he's doing. I mean, the man been doing this since the 80s and navigated us through a lot of pandemics ranging from AIDS to swine flu. So his credentials are unquestionable in this field. But I think when we saw in the news that there's no reserve of vaccine after, then President-elect Biden was asking that that's the first thing he's going to do, and it was revealed there's no more to be released because there is no reserve. This is not a good indication of the Trump's end of his administration, where they said there was like 13 million doses or whatever, and there were zero. And they were like, oh, we already rolled these things out. I'm like, yeah, but you can't roll out stuff that wasn't there. So, I mean, I think they would have a very hard time right off the bat. I mean, he has a very talented group of people, including people from Harvard, people from here, as well as our hospitals systems. He's tapped for experts. I think it's going to be a very hard time because he's got to build off the previous administration's work, and the quality of the administration's work prior is the base mark of what you're going to work with today in a short period of time. And the lack of transition period, a proper transition period, so when they get there, they know what's going on and can, just carry forward the previous person's work. That's clearly very problematic because yeah. You're just picking up the ball from the next person. I mean, any executive branch person will tell you what the person left behind is what you got to pick up. And you got to keep moving the ball forward. But if it's a poor ball or it's a poor condition ball, you know, moving forward becomes much harder.
And yeah. I think he's enacted some kind of a defense act to try and ramp up production of the vaccine.
Yeah, he's implemented a war act where the president can commandeer essentially by military order for them to revamp factories and other types of manufacturing towards military purpose. Since he talked about treating COVID-19 like a war, you know, it gives you a reason to address the military acts to utilize them in this fashion. The same thing we're dealing with here, like the emergency order we have is a wartime act that the governor's using. I think every state governor is using the same act because no state has a pandemic emergency law.
Right.
So every state is using their old Cold War military acts in states of emergency. So the federal government's doing the same thing because really no law designed for the situation.
Right. No, I mean, if it was a war, there'd be, you know, air raids and things like that.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, obviously, we're not from the greatest generation, which actually had to, you know, find scrap metal, which had to ration food at home, which had to reallocate enormous resources to the war effort beyond just human resources, but also material resources at home.
Yeah.
And the military did back then commandeer, particularly engine manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
To manufacture engines for planes in particular. So the military, you know, issued contracts, but also basically just took over places and said, look, we got to build plane engines now. So we'll see how far you can get, because one of the problems of vaccine manufacturing is you need very specific plants.
Right.
And PPE issue isn't resolved all the way, but it's very clear globally speaking, there's more PPE generated now at both domestic and overseas than probably they've made in the last decade.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, with gloves and masks being manufactured by everyone that can. So I think we've kind of like passed the PPE hurdle in some ways. I know it is still hard to get your hands on some, but the natural market's taking care of itself, and I think it'll continue to keep growing on its own. But I mean, in terms of vaccine manufacturing, it'd be interesting of how he is able to get which businesses to convert to manufacturing, because it's a specialized manufacturing. It isn't just grab any shop. And you got stuff in process. Johnson & Johnson stuff is on its way. I mean, they're preparing for an FDA review in the next several months. So obviously you're not going to commandeer a drug company's manufacturing window on the verge of another FDA approval.
Right.
And why do we need so many? Well, I mean, the technology is relatively similar, but the process of developing the vaccine is different, which means that having more options available with more people manufacturing them gives us more ability to get doses into our arms.
Right. And I think the Johnson & Johnson is just a single dose. So that's got a benefit over the others right now.
That's correct. And the Globe actually has a very interesting, very short synopsis of the various drugs around the country. And there's like another like four of them in development globally.
Okay.
In the U.S. and in Europe. But the efficiency rates are kind of varied. And in the scientific community, it's supposed to peer review all your stuff. Well, we skipped the peer review this time and went straight to regulatory review. So as we move forward on this drug and the variants of new strains of COVID-19 coming up, there'll be more peer review by scientific community. And then as a result, you know, there'll be better understanding of how to treat as well as address the effectiveness of the vaccine. So for example, the Chinese vaccine is about 50% plus ish effective versus Moderna and Pfizer, which is over 94% effective. But they also use two very different technologies. So the Chinese vaccine is built off the traditional method we use, which is taking dead viruses, disassembling the actual dead virus, and then, you know, injecting into your body.
Yeah, like a flu shot, basically.
Yeah, the original flu shot version, as opposed to Moderna and Pfizer and other countries that are doing RNA disassembly, meaning they're using these gene splices to create RNA. It's not even a dead virus. It's not even a virus. It's just genetic code to send it to our body to tell our body that this genetic code exists and attack it. So it's a little bit different. You're training, it's basically vaccine trains your body to attack a foe it's never seen before.
Right.
Or to disguise as something else that you should have spotted but snuck past you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you attack it. So, but you know, again, there's new strains out there. The infection rate of these new strains are anywhere between 40 and 70% higher, depending what strain we're talking about. And those studies are just started on those brand new strains that were just discovered just like last week. One was another one discovered last week, I think, in South Africa.
Mm.
And it's hit pretty much, these new strains have hit every country now. It's no border, including borders that have been closed to the you know, to limited travel. They're getting it. The asymptomatic carrier issue. Again.
Yep. There was a bit of bright news this week, though. The governor says the numbers here, Massachusetts, are showing a positive trend, so he's easing up some of the restrictions.
Yeah, it's still over like 3,000. So, I mean, we weren't that long ago. We were in the hundreds, just to let everyone know. And, you know, we're still floating in the high 80s, low 90s on hospitalizational beds available. So, yeah, so there's still a lot of ICU beds and hospital beds in the region that are occupied or filled. So, you know, we're in better shape. And the curve is bending, but we need to bend this curve even more.
Hmm.
And it's getting colder, and we know that, you know, this is flu and cold season, which is also means coronavirus is going to enjoy this as much as cold and flu does. And continue, of course, you know, maintain distance, masks, gloves, hand washing and sanitizing and all that stuff. I'm tired of repeating that, actually. Hmm. It's like I've said it every week nonstop since March. But I think that we've all concluded through contact tracing, which again, if you get a contact tracer, please respond to them. If you're listening, please do respond to contact tracers when they find you. That a lot of this stuff is transmitted in close quarters among people that are close together for long periods of time. And Massachusetts businesses have adjusted well to COVID-19 in terms of trying to figure out how to keep everyone safe while keeping things open. And I think that's a reflection of why one of the reasons the governor has lifted these restrictions. I think people know what they're doing now on keeping everyone safe. And, you know, overnight ban, well, I mean, it might be a snowstorm. So an overnight ban may just happen because if we get into, you know, 2 feet of snow, that takes care of itself. But, you know, there's no reason why people can't travel at night if they're just getting from place to place, home to home, particularly if you're coming from work, right?
Yeah.
Because a lot of businesses do open late. I mean, supermarkets, retail stores and whatnot. So you know, it's a sign that things are getting better. It's also an indicator that people know how to handle the pandemic well. And a lot of community-based transmission is community-based. It's between you and I spending too much time together in a closed space, not, you know, not knowing which either one of us are infected, versus actual employees. I mean, we've not heard about a lot of employee infections anymore.
True.
I think business have done an incredibly good job of that. I think, as I say, it's really about the people on the street that are, you know, engaged in close contact. Or you have people at your home, you have too many people at your home, you don't know what they've been. That becomes a bit of a more of an issue.
Yeah. Can we change gears a little, Techie? What's going on with the climate bill?
We talked a little bit this last week. We're going to start over in the legislature once we have committees.
Okay. So you don't have a committee assignment yet?
No committee assignments made yet. Climate bill, I think we have to start conversations with the governor about what we're going to do, depending on who's chairing what, because we don't know who's chairing what in both houses of Senate yet. We determine exactly how quickly this moves forward. Obviously, if you maintain the same chairs as last time, you don't have to start over. They already know what they're doing. But if it's brand new chairs, you kind of actually do start over, because new chairs means new approach, new policy issues, and new relationships between the House and Senate chairman. So we'll see how that plays out. So I think a lot of that climate bill is going to largely depend on the appointments we made, hopefully sometime in mid-February.
Okay. There is enough to override the veto, is that right, if it comes to that point again?
Well, if it comes to that point, obviously, for everyone on the call, I think we have to explain some technical issues now. The legislative session closed on January 15th. Not 15th, 5th. Jeez, COVID fatigue, clearly.
It's the first thing together after a while, I know.
No, it's tough to blend because we got sworn in January 6th. So the close of the 191st session was on January 5th. And all the bills we sent to the governor's desk that evening, the governor actually can veto. And since that session is closed, we can't override anything he vetoes.
Right.
So people talk about pocket vetoes a lot. Well, pocket vetoes occur when the governor doesn't sign a bill at the end of a session, because we can't come back and override. If he just vetoes something, it would be a line item veto on a budgetary or bond issue, or just straight veto up on a whole bill. We can't override because that session is now closed.
Oh, okay.
Okay, because you don't have the same legislature that voted on it the previous session, because we have new members that got elected.
Gotcha. They may vote.
Yep. Exactly. So we sworn that new group of legislators, we opened a new session, and that group of legislators never voted on the last session's bills. Plus the fact the session's now closed, meaning that end is end of business for that session. Yep. We can't go back and revisit. So anything he vetoed or line item vetoed, he can he can just let it go, and we can't do anything about it. And then we're going to have to start over this whole new legislative process on things like the climate bill, for example, and other unfinished business that's remaining. Even stuff that didn't get to the governor's desk that just between House and Senate chairs couldn't quite figure out how to get to final decision on. You know, will be coming again this session. But given the fact that, you know, we have a new speaker, you know, there's never a guarantee, by the way, of any speaker that what your current chairs look like now is going to be the chairs next time. So you can't make that assumption at all that anybody in leadership positions nor chairs are going to be the same people you dealt with previously.
Yeah.
Including myself. Just because I'm from Quincy doesn't mean that, suddenly,
Ron's going to do whatever you want, right?
Exactly. I mean, let's get that myth out of the way right now. Again, this is like the third time I've explained this.
Yeah.
Just because I'm from Quincy too doesn't mean that Ron's going to do what I want, okay? That's not true. I'm subject to every member in the House's decision-making process for Ron's recommendations for chairs and leadership positions, and then the Democratic caucus would have to approve that. So that occurs after joint rules are made. We don't have joint rules yet. We expect to have a joint rules debate hopefully in the next 2 weeks. And then the House and Senate have to agree on joint rules. House rules operate House. Joint rules operate the two branches working jointly on bills movement as well as the joint committees. Because the House and Senate chairs committees together.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, we're kind of in this kind of waiting pattern. Right now, it's bill filing period. My email box is slowly but steadily filling up with people asking me to co-sign bills, which I will look at as we go along. We're trying to get my own bills in order. And that's going to take a bit of time. and because also it's all remote, so they had to change the entire bill filing system, the electronic bill filing system for us to get in. There's also security issues about the stuff. So we migrated off to Microsoft 365 as our portal now, you know, the VPNs and encryption and all that stuff as we get through its bill filing, because we don't need to tamper with the system.
Right.
Well, we're being trained on this new stuff and technology on my side. So that's kind of where things stand. I mean, the global warming bill is going to have to start over again. Like I said, it really depends on who's chairing, what will set the tone of what those bills are going to look like.
Okay.
Moving forward. And, you know, as we continue on in Speaker Ron's regime,
better word. Not Speaker a regime Ron, yet. It hasn't started.
You know, we'll have a, you know, he'll set an agenda on his own front beyond the chair's agenda. Because, you know, every chair has his own agenda.
Yeah.
Plus the overarching agenda by the speaker, and the chairs will input to the speaker their agendas to help form the larger house agenda. I think there's this kind of myth that the speaker's agenda comes down and everybody has to do what he does. Mm-hmm. That's assuming the speaker knows everything known to man, and none of us know everything known to man.
Yeah. I'm just curious, because there's been I'm sure you've noticed a tremendous spike in energy costs just recently. I wonder if that had anything to do with that bill.
No, that's actually us doing things like this right now. Throughout the summertime, we talked about this beginning of pandemic, your water and energy usage is going to go immensely because your kids are home, you're home, you're using your air conditioning, you're heating home longer, you don't make the house cooler when you're not home, which is what a lot of people should do, are doing during the wintertime. You don't have to set it at 75 degrees if no one's going to be home for the whole day because they're out of work. You can set it at like 68. And, you know, crank it back up when, you know, right before we get home on the timer, on your heating system's timer. Mm-hmm. When you got a nap these days, you could do it from before you leave the office.
That's true. Yeah.
You could, you know, tell your Nest to go, hey, you know, I'm going my home. I want my house by this temperature. But no, that's not the case. I mean, now everybody is home more often and your energy costs go up because the consumption goes up. And why does it go up? Well, we're at the end of the line. Okay. Because, you know, geography, the energy coming from out of state, we're at the end. So people at the end are most challenged. We don't have a lot of energy manufacturing in the state. Mm-hmm. A lot of gas fire plants have closed. We got no oil fire plants left, and there's absolutely zero coal generation in Massachusetts. So, you know, we talk about gas pipeline access, and Massachusetts' priority for energy is home heating is number one for gas. Energy generation is number two. And if we can't generate enough energy on the current contract, we have to do basically short bids. So ICE New England, the inter-system operator who oversees our New England energy transmission system, will monitor. And it looks like they're coming a very rapid decline of power, and there's no other option in energy generation in Massachusetts to fill it. They actually have to go to the spot market, meaning who they can find that's connected to transmission system in, you know, that connects to the New England region. They can transmit power in 15 minutes or less.
Okay.
It's basically literally a spot bid. So they could put a bid up. We need power. You got 15 minutes. Give me prices. Well, if you need power, you got 15 minutes for bids, and you need it now. Well, dude, who has the leverage in this negotiation?
Well, right. Yeah, it's you pay for convenience, just like you go to your local convenience store and it's more money. Yeah.
Yep. But, you know, this is more. Yeah, exactly. And this is more critical, right? So, well, again, I mean, best people can do is, for example, if you're using a device like I'm using my cell phone here. Actually, this is actually my cell phone now, but this is my old cell phone. You know, don't plug it in all the time. Take it off the charge. Same thing with your laptops. You know, let it go charge for a while. Unplug everything off the wall. You know, reduce your energy consumption. You know, try to bring more daylight into your house. Turn off the lights. You know, try to, you know, if you can, you know, don't use as much heating during the daytime. If you can, do it. You know, obviously proper insulation, check your doors and windows, use your drapes at night to keep the cold air out if you've got drafty windows. So, I mean, you know, people need to, you know, be more mindful about the energy consumption, water consumption during working at home as much as we do now. And, you know, I've never had my computer this on this long since my campaign in 2010 when I quit my job to run for office, and the computer was never off because it was constantly, you know, generating documents and managing campaign lists and so forth during that time period. So,
yeah.
You know, that's part of it. So, yeah, everybody, your electric bill is going to be bad. Your water bill is going to be bad. The best thing you do is try to be mindful of your consumption and you know, take some steps to turn off lights you don't need and unplug devices you're not using at the moment.
How important is it for Massachusetts, Techie, to get another economic stimulus bill passed in Washington?
We won't say no.
Right.
The FY22 budget is going to feel the full impact of this winter. Last year, we had a massive economic impact, but it also was coming in the late spring, summertime, which impacted our entire hospitality industry immensely through the summer and fall. But we also got through, you know, the Christmas period and the early part of the year on the holiday season and whatnot. So you had this kind of weird economic average problem, mm-hmm. So to speak, over the course of the, you know, last year and a half. Unemployment numbers are high in the country right now. There's, you know, another 900,000 people apply for unemployment over the last week. You know, well into 13 million people. The unemployment rate will go up in Massachusetts as, I'm sorry to say, there's some cold, hard reality coming about whether these jobs are coming back.
Mm.
And you say, oh, people say, oh, you make restaurant jobs. No, it's not just about restaurant jobs. It's about hospitality in general. So, you know, the tour guide, the hotel, the additional, do you need additional people to do transportation, like delivery services, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. bus transportation?
Yep. People in the supply chain, right, for those industries.
Absolutely. Wholesaler seafood.
Yep.
Someone brought up to me the other day, what do you do with oysters? You don't exactly bring them home. You know, restaurants are really much a, and it's, they don't sell them like four at a time to a restaurant or a hotel. And hotels are big users of seafood. So this whole supply chain issue is going to come full steam, and it'll be apparent through the layoffs. And, you know, janitors, commercial office buildings are not having people right now. Something as simple as maintenance is going to see a change. So I do know, and I agree completely, there's a heavy focus on restaurants, but there's a lot of other aspects in the chain of hospitality. And there's a lot of other aspects regarding the impact on how we do our business impacts someone's jobs. We're working at home. I don't think anyone's really thinking about those maintenance people that was keeping up your building who are really not necessary right now.
Yeah.
You don't need as many people to maintain a building if none of us are there. You know, I know it's not your problem in the sense that, you know, working from home, but it isn't your problem, but it is the situation we're in today. So I fully expect, and I don't want to sound more grim than I normally do in a podcast, but, you know, the unemployment numbers will be going up to next month. And the only thing, someone would not be able to do anything good about it. I mean, no matter how much we mask and wear use hand sanitizer, won't matter because there's nothing to do with front-facing retail job. It's the back end jobs and supply chain problems. I was talking to my friend Paul McMurtry, who owns the Dedham Theater, and he's hurting hard because, you know, movie theater. Yeah, but you know, he told me there's a lot of supply chain issues in the film industry no one knows about, particularly distribution.
Mm.
So if there's no movie theaters open, someone's got to, you know, do the marketing. Someone's got to get that film to you. There's got to be able to sell those films, negotiate that stuff. You know, it's very involved. And there's layoffs in that section of the industry that really gets no news. So you know, your friends and neighbors, you know, don't tell you their problems because they're your problems. So you can't assume that everyone around you is doing fine, but as I like to tell folks, just because someone looks like okay doesn't mean they're okay. That's their business, not your business. So you shouldn't make assumptions about your neighbors. But it's going to get rough. And, you know, supply chains can be a big deal. I mean, we have an aluminum shortage caused by the trade wars. One of the impact of the Trump trade wars, aluminum shortage. And I learned CO2 is actually made from fossil fuels.
Huh.
So because it's based off of ethanol. And one of the biggest generators of ethanol isn't necessarily corn. It's actually petroleum products.
Oh, I didn't know that. Interesting.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. So, you know, when they're not making much gasoline for your car, there's less ethanol available, and the gas they use is captured and put in your soda and your beer. So, yeah, it's interesting. They don't waste anything. It's, you know, every petroleum product is squeezed to the point where no matter, even the gas is used to into commercial use.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's literally squeezing everything out of every drop of oil. So, you know, it sounds like, oh, you know, sounds like a big deal. But if you like your beer and you like anything carbonated, you know, could be looking at the supply chain issue caused by our reduction of petroleum consumption.
Yeah. Well, you never put the two and two together, but when you look at it from behind the scenes, you can see how it affects each other.
Yeah, as the former chairman, because I'm not chair yet, the Consumer Protection Professional Licensure, alcohol industry is under my purview. So discussions of that industry and supply chain issues, it's pretty involved in how, international trade war, a lot of aluminum comes out of China, has an adverse effect on your ability to get beer, and actually impacts worse small breweries. Because if you like those microbrews and the local brews, and they're the ones that need to get aluminum cans, and it's getting more expensive.
Yeah.
Big industries, I think I said this before a couple months back, big industries like Budweiser is trying their best not to pass that cost along because the cost is high, but it can make up in volume.
Right. But
Russell's almost 70% of all manufacture of beer and distribution goes to restaurants.
Wow. Okay.
So yeah, retail stores, we all know, is doing very well in most places. Packy stores are doing well. I mean, if you're a college town, well, that package store may not be much longer there. But I think, like I said, it's not everyone, but a good chunk of package stores doing okay right now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, though, just because you're seeing beer being sold in package stores doesn't mean that beer industry is in great shape.
So much to talk about still, and, such a long way to go still. It can be a little disheartening when you think about it, but you have to take it, I think, one step at a time.
I mean, I don't know what they say. I mean, we keep people ask me how I'm doing. I'm like, I really don't know what to tell you anymore. You just try to keep up with folks, even though I'm not doing a ton of policy work as a chair. I'm still getting a lot of calls on DUA, unemployment assistance stuff is still very much high on the call list. I'm getting a little more issues about housing calls, about assistance on how housing, rental issues. What's the deal with this rental moratorium? I get a handful of calls about the governor's continuation of unrolling his small business assistance packages. Mm-hmm. And it's been rolling out in phases. So people have not, definitely look it up on the governor's website, on the state website regarding small business assistance program. You just type into Google, it's going to come up.
Yep, absolutely.
And see, we're on the various rounds. I mean, Quincy has done well in some ways. I mean, we've got a lot of, I won't say a lot, that's actually not true. We got two or three dozen businesses that receive some assistance, ranging from like $25,000 to $75,000business for a small business. But of course, there's a lot of small businesses in Quincy. We all know that. It's more than three dozen that need assistance.
Yeah.
And the problem is there's only so much to go around, I'm sorry to say. And I know some businesses are probably going to fall through the cracks. I mean, for example, small franchise hotels have been forgotten about by the administration. And it's just hard because there's so many places hurting at once. It's not like a conventional economic recession. This is not, anything we normally deal with where, I believe, capitalism, the economy changes, you change, and economy changes again, we change, and keep moving forward. This isn't that, and this is where the challenge lies. And we talk about stimulus package coming out of D.C. Not just to help states out and closing out their budgets as part of COVID help, because COVID's eating our money up. Mm-hmm. As we're trying to provide a lot of different types of assistance beyond what we normally do, but whether it can provide more direct assistance to these industries that people have kind of not realized also need help, as well as, direction on how to do COVID relief. And then there's also the health insurance question. It's going to be popping up full steam, which is in the speaker's wheelhouse, is, all these impacts COVID has on your health long-term. You've seen in the news how, people have respiratory issues. They still have muscle aches issues. There's still fatigue issues. And they still have immune compromise issues and sometimes permanent lung damage.
Yeah.
And is health insurance going to cover all that?
Okay, on that happy note.
I don't have the answer. I'm just letting you all know and it's not just like a handful of people. We're talking, potentially, hundreds of thousands of people and growing, of people that get COVID and they do have long-term effects.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. We don't know the answers. Because this is all brand new, it's yet to be written.
Yep, and the best thing we can all do to try avoid this, again, wear your mask, social distance, do not go out if you can, if you're sick. If you are sick for any reason, do not, engage other people. Hygiene, wash your hands, sanitize, be conscious of people around you. doing that keeps our businesses open. And no one really, I've not talked to anybody that thought COVID was a good idea. So you really don't want to get it. And and is it just me? It feels like I know more people in round two than round one of COVID.
I have experienced that also. So no, I don't think it's just you. I think it's this more contagious variant that they're talking about that's starting to make its presence known.
Yeah, and we didn't do a full-blown lockdown like we did the first time around, too.
Right.
So, I mean, this has become even more of a personal responsibility issue, us individually taking care of each other. So, the fact that I think both of us, just the two of us here, have talked to people and just kept finding out more and more of COVID. Oh, yeah, I had COVID. Don't recommend it. It's awful. And go through the details of the symptoms. And thankfully, no hospitalization. But just because you weren't hospitalized does not mean this is a good experience.
Right.
And some people got lucky where, I talked to some folks, only that individual got it. But the rest of my family got skipped, thankfully, in that instance. And some people started to pass around like any other COVID and flu virus. And I talked to some folks whose family members have already passed from it. And it was, they didn't realize it happened until it happened. And then the person's gone.
Right.
I'll be interested to see how many people have not been impacted by a COVID story yet. I deal with a lot of people, but it seems abnormally high. And if you're not taking this seriously, I mean, I don't know what to say to folks. I mean, no one wants to see other one harmed, and the only way we can keep other people from being harmed is by you doing your best to do the things we keep recommending you do, so you keep harming from others.
Right. Yeah. Let's hope we turn the corner soon with the new administration in place and some renewed focus on testing and vaccinating. Hopefully, there's a brighter time ahead in 2021.
Well, I mean, we discussed a few weeks back how 2021 kind of exploded on us. Let's keep moving forward. And Chinese New Year is rolling around in February. Year of the Ox is coming, so we're in the second year of the lunar cycle, but we can talk about that more later.
Yes.
So I got a second New Year opportunity. Seems like the January 1st wasn't working out for us right off the bat. maybe I'll get lucky using Chinese New Year as my new start point.
It is going to be a virtual event, of course, again this year, but we're helping Quincy Asian Resources here at QATV put it together, and we're looking forward to a fun time.
Absolutely. I'll be watching at home or if I miss it. There's always YouTube, everybody. So, you want to catch me saying stupid stuff, I'm now immortalized on YouTube for what? We've got to be 50 of these things we've done together at this point?
Oh, anyway, I think so. Yeah, absolutely. reaching out to you, Tacky. I always like to end with that.
617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. I received some constituents that had some issues with the system. Again, the system's just push anybody's name. Just push anyone. The staff will get the voicemail, which is sent by email to their computers and their phones, because, phones. Today's where we live in. And we'll get the messages and we'll get back to you as quickly as we can. Tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. You guys got me in a lull before my email box is overwhelmed. So I can't promise you that's going to last much longer because right. The overwhelm is coming, given my past experience of this. Our Facebook, Tacky Chan, State Representative Tacky Chan. Don't use my personal page. Go to the public page, State Representative Tacky Chan. We've been posting new information up there as we get it. And of course, tackycheyn.org, tackeychan.org. We post a lot of human service information that you can find phone numbers and things with services that most likely will save you time than calling me directly. So, several resources out there available. And, if you feel like you want to give me a break, there's always John Keane, Booth Ayers, and Speaker Mariano. If you feel like you don't want to bother me, I go right ahead.
You won't object. Spread the wealth around.
And
there's Don Hunt too, so
Dan Hunt from Dorchester. Yeah, you can go right over the bridge and go after Dan. I know I'm joking a bit, but you know, obviously I have great colleagues, and we all have different mediums of communication. And you know, I'm sure you're going to have your podcast with Speaker Ron at some point.
Yes. Oh, we've already talked to Ron. We'll have him on again, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. And but I mean, it's a great crew to work with. But you know, since they only see me here sometimes, not the others, I feel it's important that I share the wealth of constituent services.
Very thoughtful of you, Tacky. good to talk to you. Appreciate it.
You too. You be well, be safe. And I'll talk to you next week, I think a couple of times perhaps.
Yes, that's right. Yep, sounds good. All right, take care.
Take care.